This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Our first question comes from Martin Fuller, who was inspired by Stargazing Live to construct a homemade magnetometer using a Raspberry Pi and a compass. Well done, Martin. He says he's getting a periodic variation in the field strength that he measures every 24 hours and asks, is this really variation in the Earth's field, or am I picking up interference from a heating timer?
There's a nice Manchester University connection to this question. The research that I've been able to find on a sort of diurnal, so a daily variation of the Earth's magnetic field, was done by Arthur Schuster, who was one of the founders of physics here in Manchester. We have a building named after him in the physics department. So between 1889 and 1907, he studied this question of whether there is a daily variation of the Earth's magnetic field. And he found one. He found a magnetic field variation of 10 to the minus 4 Gauss over the course of a day, and he attributed that to ionisation in the upper atmosphere caused by the sun. Unfortunately, Martin detects something a bit bigger than that, about 100 times bigger, 10 to the minus 2 Gauss. So I suspect that something else is causing what Martin's finding with his magnetometer. A few possibilities for this. There are various ones. One anecdotal one I've heard today is that if you have a cat with a magnetic collar to open little cat doors, then that's possibly a cause of this. But possibly more likely is ambient temperature, is my guess, that ambient temperature is changing the physics of the detector that you're using. That would just be my guess. But it looks like what you found is not a real physical effect, I'm afraid.
All right, thanks for that question, Martin, and good luck with your homemade magnetometer. Our next question is from Franco Rodriguez. He asks, considering the conservation of energy principle, what happens to the lost energy a photon experiences when it redshifts during its long path through the cosmos? Could this be a possible dark energy source?
This is a surprisingly subtle question to do with conservation of energy and relativity and general relativity in particular. But we can boil it down to something a bit more sort of everyday that we can understand more easily. So imagine that you indeed are on a train holding a tennis ball. As far as you're concerned, that tennis ball is not moving relative to you, so it's got no kinetic energy, it's got no energy. If I'm standing by the side of the train and watching it whiz past me, as far as I'm concerned, that tennis ball is moving very, very quickly and has quite a lot of kinetic energy. So we know straight away that energy is not a thing that's the same in any frame of reference. So we call them inertial frames in physics, a frame of reference where the normal laws of physics apply. So we know this is a different quantity between two different places, so it's not a thing we should expect to be the same. And the principle of that energy being different in different frames applies just as much to photons as it does to tennis balls, except as our correspondent correctly notes, in photons that energy is to do with frequencies and wavelengths rather than just the tennis ball's direct speed. So it turns out that the frame of reference those photons are emitted in is different from the frame of reference they are received in, and that's because as the universe expands, what is changing, or a person in one position in the universe and in a different position in the universe are in two different frames of reference. So it's not that the photons have actually lost or gained energy, it's just that the way we interpret them has changed. And I'm indebted to the website physics.stackexchange for that quite nice analogy with the train.
Great, thanks a lot. So finally we've got a nice question from Andrew Tyzak, who asks, could it be possible for somebody aboard the ISS to lean out of a window and throw, in inverted commas, a time capsule to Mars? And this references one of our odds and ends in which we talked about a group of students who wanted to actually send a time capsule to Mars.
This is a very nice question. It takes me back in time to undergraduate days and orbital dynamics and those questions, which is great fun. And also to the great fun game Kerbal Space Program, where you get to do this kind of thing for real. The answer is basically no, unfortunately. Gravity means that you can't do that. There's two things we need to distinguish quite carefully, and it's between weightlessness and zero gravity, and those are different things. When we see astronauts on the ISS floating around, that's not because there's no gravity there. It's because they're falling, and orbiting is a kind of falling, at the same speed as the capsule they are in. So it's because they're in free fall is why it looks like they're weightless and they're floating around. So there's no gravity, so you haven't got away from the Earth's gravitational field. So to get something to Mars, you still need to add in energy. You need to add in quite a lot of energy, and we can work out how much energy that is. So there's two speeds we need to know. We need to know the speed that you'd have to throw the thing to get it to Mars, and we need to know the speed that the ISS is already moving, because remember, the ISS is already going pretty fast, so maybe that's a big fraction of what we need to throw it at. The first impulse of any physicist when you have any kind of problem is to conserve energy. So how can I conserve energy in this problem? And we can do that to work out the escape speed that we need for the time capsule we're going to throw to Mars. So we say, okay, if I can figure out how fast the ISS is going now, if I throw this thing and it's just fast enough to get it away from the Earth's gravitational field into what we call infinity, although actually it will just be, far enough away that it's no longer relevant, then we can do that equation. We can equate those two things. You can do that by knowing, for example, the radius that the ISS orbits at, that kind of question. So that's how we do that speed. To get the speed the ISS is actually moving at, we do a different kind of thing. We equate two different things, and that's the forces on the International Space Station, and that's the centripetal force that we need in a keep it where it is, and the Earth's gravitational force attracting it. And it turns out that's a very, very similar calculation to the first one. So the difference between those two things is how fast the astronaut would have to throw the ball out of the International Space Station. That's 3 kilometres a second. So unfortunately, unless our astronaut has a very strong arm and can throw his time capsule or her time capsule at 3 kilometres a second, then it won't be very easy to do.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for answering our questions, Joe.
Thanks a lot.